both new faces and old, both students and parents. This is really one of the highlights of our year, where we get to bring parents into our Beit Midrash. We really do believe that the experience that your sons have in yeshiva is one that integrates into their life back home, will integrate into their life when they continue. And we, to that end, we really always enjoy bringing you, the parents, into our Beit Midrash, so you can be part of our learning, part of our, get a glimpse of our world. Same reason why we always invite and love when parents come to visit in the year, to sit in on classes, to give classes, whatever the case may be. It really is one of the most special things for us at Migdal. So the topic that I want to talk about, and people feel free, in general, mute yourselves, but if you want to ask a question, feel free to unmute yourself and scream out, or send a message in the chat. Both are fine. The topic that I want to talk about, as crazily enough, in less than 3 hours here in Israel, and I see that we have people across the United States here, so in 10 hours and in 13 hours, people will, the secular calendar will turn over to January 1st, 2024. So I figured we would talk a little bit about the value of calendars in general, and whether there is a value to specifically using the Jewish calendar. And I mean that both in terms of years, in terms of months, in terms of how we count the days of the week, both halachic and philosophical. I mean, that's the question that I want to explore today. So before we actually get into the sources, if I asked you, what is the value, or is there a value to using a particular calendar, a particular calendar from a specific culture that reflects its history, its meaningful moments? Is that valuable? If it is valuable, why? Again, before we get into the formal sources, is that something that if I'd asked you before you looked at any of these sources, you would have said was meaningful, was valuable, was something that should be appreciated or pursued? So what do you think, right? Again, this is just sort of initial thoughts, a priori, what you would have said without any exposure to any sources. Students or parents are free to jump in. So I see Rebecca said, one thought is that a calendar is like a language. So if there's a value in being multilingual, right? So Rebecca says, and I agree with this, right, that there's a calendar isn't just a way of, you know, practically telling us, you know, I need to have a meeting with you tomorrow in 3 days, and therefore we need a convention, we need a shared convention, so that I know that when we want to meet, well, that means, you know, on whatever, on Wednesday at 2 p.m., and I know whenever I had a meeting with Shlomo, this was always complicated, because with the 10-hour time difference, right, so you have to be clear, are you talking Israel time, are you talking Western time? So there is a practical element, but it's more than that, right? The calendar conveys values. It's a language. It's a way we express the way that we are guided through time, the way we mark time. You know, if we think, for example, right, let's take the days of the week, right? The days of the week, Sunday, right? What does the word Sunday indicate, right? It doesn't just indicate that it's the beginning of a new cycle. That is, in fact, in Hebrew, that's, in fact, how we demarcate Sunday. It's just Yom Rishon, the first day. But Sunday is the day of the sun, right? It's a throwback to a pagan history. And therefore, it's conveying a certain value system. Holidays, for sure, are a language, right? When a culture decides to have, you know, a Veterans Day or a Memorial Day or a President's Day, that said something about the culture, about what it values, about what it's trying to convey to the people in society. Right? I grew up. I mean, at this point, I haven't lived in America in over 10 years, but I grew up in New York. And one of the striking things when I spent 3 years in Toronto, where my wife's family is from, one of the striking things that I found when I was in Canada was the difference between American holidays and Canadian holidays. That American holidays, even if people have forgotten their meaning, what Memorial Day means, that it actually is commemorating something, the people who died, and Veterans Day is actually celebrating the people who sacrificed and risked themselves in various wars. In Canada, many of the holidays are unabashedly just days off. Family Day, Simcoe Day, the legal holiday in August, which at least in some of the provinces, I think that was the one in Ontario, the Simcoe Day, but in some provinces it has no name. And it was very symbolic of the different values of the society where, you know, as my in-laws told me, in Canada, they don't pretend that it's anything more than they need a long weekend every few weeks. So we make holidays. And that's a statement about the role of vacation and the role of leisure in society, whereas at least in theory, a Memorial Day is a statement. Canada, I think, also has a Memorial Day. But so as Rebecca says, right, it's a language. It conveys something. It conveys values. It conveys a message to the people who mark the calendar. And if that's the case, so then there would be a value. Now, Rebecca correctly notes that maybe we have to ask the question more sharply, which is, okay, even if there's a value to, let's say, using a calendar, does that mean you only use one calendar, or that you also use the calendar, right? It, as she put it in the previous one, is there a value to being multilingual, right? And you know, I very much feel that, you know, as an American who's moved to Israel, and there are many Americans around me, there is a unique brand to American Olim where people, not everybody, but many people will continue to celebrate Thanksgiving just because it reminds them of America, it reminds them of family, it reminds them of, or they just like turkey or pumpkin pie or whatever the case may be. And in Israel, the fact that we go farther, there are many people who do this hybrid of Thanksgiving, which always comes out around the Ethiopian Jewish holiday of, and I've never pronounced this right, of Sigid, I'm not, S-I-G-D, but it's, right, but it's an active attempt to have a multicultural language of marking time in Israel. And as I note later on, in Israel, by law, every legal document has to mark the secular date, as it were, but also the Hebrew date. Okay, so any other thoughts, right? So what we've seen is the value, and then to raise the question, well, what is the value? Is the value to focus exclusively on one calendar, or is it to not ignore a calendar, to not lose a way of you know, engaging in a history, what was the comment here? In a nationalist history, in a nationalist story. And okay, any other thoughts before we turn into sources? Again, you can talk or comment, you know, by chat. Yeah, who's talking? Oh, there you are. Okay, go, Yossi.
I was wondering, halachically, isn't writing have to be with a quill on parchment with ink?
Well, for what? Certain ritual writing needs a quill and ink. Standard writing doesn't need a quill and ink, right? Ritual writing does. So a Torah scroll needs it, but you know, a letter doesn't, a document doesn't. You know, I mean, even things that you think of as ritual, like a ketubah, but a ketubah doesn't need to be written with calligraphy. It can be printed. It can be printed off the computer. You know, and anyone who's ever been Masada Kedushin, you know that the first thing you do is you print out like 3-5 copies of the ketubah before you go, and in case there's a mistake on the artistic ketubah, so you quickly write, you fill out the ketubah on one you printed off the computer, and that is going to be the halachic one, and the one with calligraphy will go on the wall, and that's fine, and you will keep the legal one somewhere else, in a safe, I don't know, do whatever you want with it, just keep it safe, but no, right, for many things in halacha, you do not need a quill, you do not need intent, okay. Sorry, this cough. Okay, So the source is here. I can pull it up on the screen. I've sent it out as well. Here we go. Let me share the screen. Okay. So if we look at the sources, so the main source for this discussion really appears in a Ramban. Nachmanides, living in the 13th century, commenting on the verse in the Parsha in 2 weeks from now. HaChodesh hazeh lachem, rosh chodashim, rishon hu lachem lechadshei hashana. This month, meaning what we call Nisan, the month in which Pesach falls, is the head of the months. It is the first for you to the months of the year. Now, what does that mean? Right? So he is being told that there is a calendar, and on the Jewish calendar, so Nisan is the first month, but beyond that, does this have normative value? Is it descriptive? What exactly is he doing? So the Ramban comments as follows. He says, V'tam ha-chodesh hazeh lochem rosh chodashim she'yimnu oto Yisrael chodesh harishon. The meaning of this is that this month is for you the head of months, meaning that the Jews should count it as the first month. And then from there you count the other months, Sheni, Ushlishi, the second, the third, Ad Tashlum Hashana B'Shnei Masar Chodesh, until the end of the 12th month, Kidei Sheyeh Ze Zikaron B'Neis Hagadol, so that you will remember the great miracle of the Exodus. The Alkein Ein L'Chadashim Shem B'Torah. And therefore, the months of the year in the Torah have no names. Eliyomar bechodesh hashlishi. We simply say in the third month. Similarly, by Shabbat, where we commemorate b'manoteinu, we menu echad b'Shabbat u'sheni b'Shabbat. When we count it, we say the first day of the week towards Shabbat, the second day towards Shabbat. Kasher afaresh, as I will explain later. Tach izkira b'yitziat Mitzrayim b'manoteinu bechodesh harishon. So we count the first month to our salvation, the second month to our salvation. And he adds, this isn't a count of years, it's a count of months. Because the actual year, unlike in the secular calendar where the first month is also where the year changes number, that's not true on the Hebrew calendar. The months change in Nisan and the years change in Tishrei. The rabbis already mentioned this. V'amru shmot hachadashim alu imanu mibavel. That the names that we have now, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, that is not original to the Torah. That only was adopted when we returned in the second return to Israel, in the time of Ezra, in the time of the second temple. They originally didn't have any names. V'hasiba bazeh. What's the reason? Because originally the counting of the months were counting from the Exodus. But when we came back from Babylonia and therefore fulfilled the verse that said that the Jews will no longer invoke the memory, at least primarily, of God as the God who brought us out of Egypt. But the God who took us back from the northern lands, meaning from Babylonia, we started using the names that they used in Babylonia, to remind ourselves that we were there, we stood there, and God took us out. Ki eila shemot nisan iyar bezulatam shemot parsiim. Because these names are Persian. Which the Ramban claims as follows, that there is a biblical commandment to count from Nisan, to count from the Exodus, but that actually changed when we went into exile and then experienced the great miracle of returning after the declaration of Cyrus, which is one of those... If you've never seen it, it is worth seeing, but the declaration of Cyrus is actually one of the moments in the Torah and the Bible that we have the most archaeological evidence for. We actually have the Cyrus cylinder with the words that are almost identical to the words that are found in the book of Ezra. So when Cyrus allowed us to return, In celebration of the miracle of being allowed to return, we switched to refer to the months with the Babylonian names to commemorate the miracle of returning from Babel, returning from Babylonia. So, what does the Ramban say? Right, the Ramban tells us, right, let's pick apart his arguments here. Right, he tells us, right, what right, what does he tell us? He tells us that there's a biblical commandment to count the months from Nisan. Why? From the first month of the Exodus. That mitzvah changed. That commandment changed when he came back from Babel, from Babylonia. And we use the names that invoke the miracle of returning from Babylonia. And what is he getting at, right? He thinks that there is a positive commandment to invoke the Jewish names for the months because they carry theological significance, right? They carry they point to a historic national consciousness. They remind us of our origin story. And therefore, when we mark time, we mark the passage through time and our experience of this world, we don't do it arbitrarily. We invoke the founding story of our nation. We invoke the story of the Exodus. Interestingly, right, the Ramban believes that that mitzvah changed, right? That when there was a greater miracle, or a more greater in certain senses, a more immediate miracle, as it was the one that the Jews themselves had experienced by that point, we switched. We maintained the idea that one should invoke the memory of our national story while marking time, but we switched to use the Persian names to remember the journey that we had in that 70 years between the first and the second temple, from the Babylonians through the Persians and other nations in the middle, the Medes and whatever. And that's how the Ramban takes it, right? So what you see from the Ramban is that he thinks that there is a positive commandment to mark time in such a way that marking time isn't merely a practical issue. It is making a statement of our story, of our values, and more interestingly, to be cognizant as our story changes, to come up with a way of capturing that change. Okay, so what are your impressions of that Ramban? Right? Does it make sense? Is there a problem with the Ramban? Would you have formulated differently? Do you think that he thinks that you have to use the Jewish calendar exclusively, or he thinks you also need to use the Jewish calendar, right? What would you do? Shlomo, are you raising your hand? No, okay. Okay, so if you'd asked me, I would say that the simple read of the Ramban is that he thinks that there is a value to invoking the memory, but he doesn't necessarily tell you that you can't also use another system. It just needs to be that part of our conversation when we mark time is one that invokes the legacy and the story of the Jewish people. The Ramban himself points you to source 3, where he expands on this. Uvemechilta Rabbi Yitzchak Omer, Lo Tehei Mona Kederach Sha'acher Monin. Now we're talking not about the the months, but we're talking about the days of the week. Don't count the way other people count. Ela teimone l'shem Shabbat. Count towards Shabbat. Uperusha, meaning shagoyim monin yemei shavuot l'shem hayamim atzman. The non-Jewish calendar gives each day of the week its own name, its own identity. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, etc. Yikru l'chol yom shem b'fnei atzmo. Oal shemot ha-mishartim kinotzrim. Or they invoke it by celestial beings, or Sunday, Monday, right, which is after the moon. O shemot acherim shiyikru lahem. V'Yisrael monin kol hayamim l'shem Shabbat. And the Jews count all of our days towards Shabbat. Echad b'Shabbat, sheni b'Shabbat. Kizu mena mitzvah shenitztaveinu bo l'zachor tamid b'chol yom. And that's part of the mitzvah that we have of remembering the Shabbat, of remembering the Sabbath every day. Now again, does that mean it's forbidden to also count, also call it Sunday? That's not clear. But it's clear that the Ramban thinks that both in the way we conceptualize the months and the way we conceptualize the days of the week, we are telling a story. We are pointing towards values. We are marking our emergence from Egypt or marking our return from Bavel. We are highlighting the centrality of Shabbat in the way we conceptualize time, the belief that God created the world. Okay, I see you have a question from Josh. Go.
So is there a
Possibly. In what way? In what way would it be different? It could be, but in what way?
When Shabbat is the destination, the ultimate destination, whereas the starting point.
Yeah, so I think you're right, right? I think that's right. That Shabbat, in its story biblically, that is our relationship to it. It is the culmination of creation, and therefore we count towards it. Whereas Yetziyat Mitzrayim is the beginning rather than the end goal. And I think that's right. I think you're definitely right. But what we see from the Ramban now is two mitzvot that highlight the centrality of the calendar. Now, in parentheses, I will note that there's something actually quite striking here, which is that the Ramban thinks that it is a mitzvah. It is a positive biblical commandment to count the months from leaving Egypt. And nevertheless, he thinks that when we left Bavel, when we returned to Israel from Bavel, we started using Persian names. Now, anyone who knows the Rambam should immediately ask me a question here, which is, well, if it's a mitzvah to count. So Naomi says, well, why do we give priority to Bavel over Mitzrayim? So that, the Rambam points to the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which says that you will no longer say, the God who took us out of Egypt, but the God who took us out of the northern lands. So, right, at some level, is that because the miracle was considered greater? Is it because it was more immediate? Right, at some level, we lost national sovereignty when we went into Galut, and therefore we were starting from nothing. There are halachic implications of that as well, that it's a big discussion in the Gemara, but at least according to some positions, Kedusha Rishona Bitla, the sanctity that was given to the land of Israel was nullified when they went into exile because the conquest of Yehoshua did not have lasting power beyond the time when the Jews actually lived there, whereas the return, the sanctity that was created has lasting power even in the time of exile, and the why that's true is a fascinating discussion. So at some level, right, it seems to be either because the miracle was perceived of as greater or at least more immediate, or the one that actually guided their lives. But, right, if you know the Rambam and the Rambam's Ikarim, I'll give you a clue, right, the Rambam's fundamentals of faith, what is extremely odd about the Ramban's claim, right, the claim that when we left Egypt, we were supposed to count from Egypt, and when we came back from Bavel, we were supposed to change the names. Yeah, Shlomo. Very good. Rav Shlomo notes correctly, the Rambam has a rule that anything that is a mitzvah has to be eternal and unchanging. And yet, here the Ramban seems to count a mitzvah and think that it changes in nature. So you have to draw one of two conclusions. Either he doesn't think this is a formal mitzvah, it's a more loose value, and therefore has a bit more flexibility to it, or more radically, you have to reject the claim of the Rambam. Rav Yosef Albo, in the next source, takes that position. And he rejects the position of the Rambam. So if you look at source 4, he says, the Nirem, he said, it seems from this game, it seems that they thought that the command to count the months was temporary. Ratolomar, Kol Od Shetatmina Gulahi, as long as that redemption continued. Aval Acher Shagalu Shinit, but once they went into exile, Vinigalu Misham, and then they were redeemed from there. Vinistavo Yide Yirmiya. And Yirmiyahu said, you will now remember God who took you out of the northern lands and not the God who took you out of Egypt. They stopped counting based on the months of Egypt. So the years, they started counting from the creation of the world. And they started counting the months based on the names that they had in Assyria and Persia. Right? So the Rabbi Yosef Albo bites the bullet and says, yeah, we simply don't have this as an absolute rule. We just don't have an absolute rule that mitzvah can't change. And therefore, you know, you wouldn't expect then in, you know, this minor topic of, relatively minor topic of how do we mark the calendar, that you would get this quite radical theological dispute as to whether or not all mitzvot are definitionally eternal or not. But there you go. The Maram Chaviv rejected that. And he said, no. And this comes back to the question that we said before, which is, when we say that there is a value or a mitzvah to count the months, do we mean to the exclusion of any other count, or just that we need to also commemorate it? But there's no problem, as Rebecca said before, to be multilingual in our commemoration of values. So the Maram Chaviv said, no, why would you say something so radical? You are assuming that the use of a calendar is exclusive, but it's not exclusive. It just means that you need to also, when you are telling your story, when you are marking the passage of time, when you are experiencing life, that part of that experience is commemorating Egypt. But if more miracles take place and become relevant to the Jewish people, so then, as he says in Vayim, mitzvah aleinu, he said, you have to make it that the first month is the one that you leave Egypt. But it doesn't mean that you can't give it a name also. Similarly, the Abar Benel says, Venirali, Shalavu Bazal Mitzvah Achodesh. You didn't violate the commandment of counting months. They didn't stop calling it first month, second month, v'mitzvaram. In addition, they also mentioned the months from Bavel. So you see both from the Mara, from the Maram ben Chaviv and the Bar Benel, that the value that we're talking about here isn't to not use the non-Jewish calendar, to not use a calendar other than that which commemorates Egypt. It's simply to make sure that part of our national consciousness retains the connection to Yitziat Mitzrayim. And if you look in 7, these are in the footnotes of Rav Shavel on the Ramban. He says, V'efshar shekavanat Rabbeinu l'davar acher. It could be that the Ramban is pointing something else. Dila olam ein yisrael lekro b'shemot acherim. Maybe he thinks there is no prohibition to call the months by other names. Va'af ein chiyuv lekro b'shemot alalu. And maybe there isn't even a mitzvah to refer to the months by these names. U'masha omra torah chodesh ze lochem rosh chadashim. Maybe it's not even a mitzvah. Hurak nitinat shem lechadshei hashana. It's simply giving a name. Right? So what we have so far is the following, right? We have the Ramban, who suggests that there is a mitzvah to count based on Egypt and count towards Shabbat. And then we have a little bit of an unclarity. What does it mean there's a mitzvah? So one possibility is that he means that you should avoid other counts. right? Your entire orientation should be around the Jewish national consciousness. That seems to be the way that Rabbi Yosef Albo took him, and that's why he needs to introduce the possibility that if we change the names of the month when we came back from Bavel, that this isn't an eternal mitzvah. But the Maram Chaviv, the Abarbanel, say, no. Maybe it's not that you can't connect to other calendars. It's just that part of your national consciousness must always be remembering Egypt, must always be counting towards Shabbat. That doesn't mean you can't be multilingual in your consciousness, that you can't talk, tell different stories, and say, today is X day to Tevet and December 31st, right? To tell different stories, to say that I live in the world that orients themselves around this, and to acknowledge that today is the end of the tax year, and that in Israel I have 2 hours and 25 minutes to make donations if I want a tax receipt in Israel. Or I can mark that, because, you know, that's clearly a very important part of my life story. And also to note that it's Tevet, and there was a fast recently, and that we're approaching Shvat, and therefore it's going to start to be agriculture, the beginning of the budding of trees, and all the different things that we mark with time. Now, the Binyan Shlomo notes that one way of expressing this multiplicity of values is to only use these numbers in certain contexts. And this is coming back to what Yossi said before. But Yossi asked, well, don't you have to write in, you know, with a quill and the like? And I said, well, there's some writing which is more formal and some which is less formal. So the Binyan Shlomo uses that type of idea. And he said, listen, maybe there's a difference between different areas of halacha. And we know this, right? That there are, depending on the what we're doing, right? If I'm filing my taxes, so then the halachic date is basically irrelevant. If I'm trying to figure out when the next fast day is or the next holiday is, so obviously the only thing that matters is the Jewish holiday. If I'm trying to let people know what day it is, so maybe both of them are helpful. So he says, Esher Dada Ramban, Eino Muskam. But then he further says, but who says that we paskin like the Ramban? Who says we rule like the Ramban? Right? Maybe we simply reject this. Maybe when the Torah says that Nisan is the first month, it doesn't mean that it's prohibited to relate to other months at first. It's just telling you that the Jewish calendar starts at Nisan. That's it. No more and no less. And therefore, he says, "Vesher didadar Ramban eino muskam bidat kol haposkim." Maybe not all the halachic authorities agree with the Ramban. Dabe kol haposkim rishon lo uskar detzarach lahazkir minyan chadashim minisan, because they don't mention this. V'lachein pukhazi mayam adavar. Now he invokes a critical rule in halachic decision making, which is when you are in doubt what the halacha is, one of the critical factors you have to take into account is the lived experience of the people who are committed to the Torah. And therefore he says, listen, look around you. How many people insist that they're only going to mention Nisan, and they don't say January, or they only say Yom Rishon, and they don't say Sunday? And he says, if people don't do it, then it must be that it's not obligatory. On the other hand, the Chatam Sofer and many of his students in Hungary, and this becomes, so here's where things get interesting historically, which is, for the most part, the Ramban remained a novel position, a singular position. It wasn't really accepted by the majority of halachic decisors. But then came the Reform Movement and the response to the Reform Movement. And the one of the major moves, if anyone is into to modern Jewish history, somewhere between early modern and modern Jewish history, and has studied this, Michael Silber has written excellent articles on this, and David Ellenson has written excellent articles on this. But basically in Hungary, part of the response to the Reform Movement by the Orthodox community there, led by Rav Moshe Sofer and his students, was to double down not just on what was classically understood to be the most intense formal obligations, but to give a lot of credence to the more cultural mitzvot, maybe, the customs that pointed to Jewish identity. And therefore, they gave a lot of importance to how you counted the months, to how you dressed, to what language you used. And they were viciously opposed to, for example, to introducing sermons in the vernacular. Right? And in a really fascinating document in the Psak Din of Michalovcha in 1879, if I remember correctly, they basically said that you know saying a sermon in the vernacular or wearing the clothes of the local population was like the worst thing you could ever do, violated biblical commandment. And their way of pushing back on reform was to give a lot of importance to mitzvot / customs / values that pointed to a certain cultural identity. So if you look here, I give you two students from that school. One, the Chatam Sofer, is the father of the school. and he says, "V'zeh tochachat musar, shenichtav mechtavim v'kadomeh yom rishon b'shabbat v'chodesh rishon." This is rebuke for those people who that they should write, "Today is the first day of the first month." Lo chas v'shalom k'mismaram shomar olam, and not, God forbid, to use the numbers of the non-Jews. And similarly, the Maram Shik, Rav Moshe Shik, his student, says, "V'amona b'misparam," if you use the numbers of the non-Jewish calendar, "nir'eh l'fi ani da'ati," it seems, my humble opinion, "the over b'yisur ahu al v'shem elohim lo taskiru," you even violate the prohibition of mentioning the names of other of other gods. Because, as we know, many of the months are taken from the pantheons of the ancient world, right? They're not just arbitrary, and they're not just, right, they're not neutral. They're actually invoking a pagan culture. So what interestingly emerges from here is, first of all, we have a dispute whether this is a mitzvah at all, right? Whether this is a formal commandment at all. The second thing is, we have a dispute. If there is a commandment, then what is it? Is it to include within our national consciousness the Jewish story and tell our story through the very way that we mark days, weeks, months, and years? Or is it to avoid identifying with the culture? So the simple read of the Ramban, as was taken by Ram Chaviv and the like, is that this prohibition doesn't say you can't be in conversation with the, let's say, the American national consciousness that's around you. It just means that you can't forget what it means to be a Jew, what it means to mark your life by the Exodus towards Shabbat. But when Jewish culture was under attack, there emerged a very strong voice in Hungary that maybe it's more than that. Right? It's not just that you have to also incorporate our national story, but that you're supposed to avoid the national story or the invocation of the deities of idolatrous nations, right? And now, besides for the halachic question of, is this a mitzvah? Is it a formal commandment or not? You see three perspectives. Those who think this is not a commandment, right? That there is no special halachic value to mark our lives around the Jewish calendar. Those who think there is a mitzvah, there is a value to marking our lives around the Jewish calendar, but not to the exclusion of other stories. And those who think that no, what it means to be Jewish is to only tell our story and to avoid invoking dates that point to another story, another set of values. Here, instead of giving you 20 pages of responsa, which, when it's just the guys in yeshiva, they know I can be not so nice, and I can do that, but I'm being a little bit nicer because we have limited time. So I put my summary of some of the modern or relatively modern recent halachic authorities to see how they take this. So I gave you the summary number 11 of Rav Avadya Yosef. So Rav Avadya Yosef says, well, the calendar that is changing in just a few hours is mostly identified with Christianity. So now he says, well, and this is very interesting, because if you'd asked me what the Ramban is talking about, I would have said, what matters is the story you think you're telling, whether or not that story is correct. But Rav Avadya thinks not that way. And Rav Avadya argues that Because the according to many secular historians, the year zero is an approximation. And in fact, the first year should be several years differently. So therefore, even if you count from the year zero, whatever, right, you're not actually invoking Jesus. Now, that's shocking to me, right? Because I wouldn't have said that this is about a historical claim. I would have said it's about what story are you telling? Who cares whether it's accurate historically or not? But he thinks not, right? He thinks that what's problematic is to actually be in conversation, to actually be pointing to another national story, and therefore it has to be accurate. That is really, to me, a wild, wild approach, because it doesn't matter, right? What matters is the story you are telling, not whether that story is true. One second. I'm just going to turn off an alarm that went off over here. So in that sense, Rav Ovadia is really quite surprising. And if you continue, he says that he doesn't think there's a problem of bichukotehem, of following the practices of the idolatrous nations, because he says, listen, there's a difference between a pragmatic story and an ideological story. If the only reason to invoke the secular date was because you were invoking Jesus, so then yes, it would be a problem. But the reason we invoke the secular date is because, as I mentioned, it's relevant for taxes. It's relevant because that's what most of the world uses. And in general, there are many who believe that the prohibition of following the ways of other nations is only when you do it for no reason, when you don't have a good reason to do it. Now, for Rav Ovadia, what's very interesting for Rav Ovadia is that, right, his seemingly technical argument actually is philosophically very powerful, right? Because he says it matters not just the story that is told, but the reason that you are engaging in that story. And it may be true that there is a relationship to Christianity, but the reason you're doing it is because, you know, if my accountant reaches out to me today, it's not because she identifies with Christianity. It's because my all things that are relevant for my taxes are finishing today, and therefore I need to be aware. He further says that it also might only be prohibited to mention the names of idols when you intend to refer to them as objects of worship. And here, sure, January might invoke a member of the pantheon, but that's not what you're doing. And he notes that even the Chatam Sofer himself, who was the one who thought it was a biblical prohibition to sign your letters with secular dates, used to do it. And therefore, he must not have thought it was an absolute prohibition. He says it's better to write the Jewish date, but he doesn't think that it's prohibited. But interestingly, he says there's one exception. He says when it comes to gravestones, right, and there's nothing practical anymore, you're trying to mark the end of somebody's life and their legacy. He says there, he thinks you should only, he says, Mikomaka modani shebematzevet shel beit alamin yesh lahakvid al kach. When you're putting up a gravestone, you should only put the Jewish date. And count from the creation of the world. And you should not change from the custom that you have in the Jewish people. Because the gravestone is testimony to the eternity of the soul. And what he's getting at is that context matters. And depending on why you're invoking it and when you're invoking it, it has very different implications. And therefore, he says on a gravestone, what you're doing is you're trying to capture the nature of that person who lived as a Jew and died as a Jew. Then it would be problematic to mark it with January, with February, right? Which is a very interesting claim, which again highlights his his intuition, right? That you should analyze each scenario and figure out what exactly am I doing when I invoke different calendars in that context. The Tzitz Eliezer, Eliezer Waldenberg in 13, also thinks that this is not a formal halakha. He notes that it is found only in modern, especially Hungarian poskim, and was not classically invoked in halakhic literature after the Ramban. Then he has an interesting argument where he notes that Rav Ovadia prefers the names of the month to numbers, Right? He prefers saying January than writing one. And the reason is because he says, listen, if the mitzvah is to count based on the Jewish numbering system, so then when you write 1-1-2024, so then you are counting according to the non-Jewish calendar. But when you say January 1st, 2024, you're not counting to it. You're just referring to it, which is a very nuanced distinction. But it's fascinating in terms of what it points to, right? That he doesn't think is a problem to give things different references. It's about orientation. It's when I'm counting, when I'm figuring out where my story starts. So then it matters. Right, then you use the Jewish dates. But if you're just giving it a name, so something can have many names. The Tzitz Eliezer himself goes in the opposite direction. He says January refers to a pagan god in the pantheon. One does not. But he interestingly argues that if you want to avoid the problem, what you should do is when you write the secular date, you should write Liminhag Hanahug. You should write that I am writing the date according to the common custom. And you shouldn't write L'Sfirat HaNotzrim, not according to the Christian calendar, because then you are acknowledging that what you're embracing is an alternate value set. Instead, you should just simply say, I'm invoking these dates because that's the common custom. Which again, what he's pointing to is context matters. If I use January, but I tell you why I'm using January, and that's simply for practical reasons, then I'm avoiding the ideological statements that you are saying. He does think ideally you should use the Jewish calendar, and maybe you should write both, because again, there's an importance to not rejecting the Jewish calendar. On the other hand, the Mir Moshe takes the strict view, and he says you should be strict. He actually takes the Ramban, and he thinks that it's a biblical prohibition. He rejects Rabbi Yosef's solution as the non-Jewish calendar is based on Jesus, right? So he doesn't like using it, and he would go out of his way to not invoke the non-Jewish calendar. So, for example, he would write 980 or 80 instead of 1980, right, to not give it its full credence. And then he's very bothered by the fact that people use the names of the week, right, Sunday and Monday and the like. Now, the interesting thing is that almost all people assume there's a value to using the Jewish calendar. In terms of years, invoke the date ascribed to the creation of the world. Right, so 5784. But as the Ramban notes, that's not actually the mitzvah, right? The story that we're telling is not the creation of the world. It's the Jewish story. And that starts not at the creation of the world. It starts at the Exodus. And therefore, when I was in yeshiva, in Yeshivat Har Tzion, in Gush, Rabbi Yaakov Meidan had his own count. And on every lecture he gave, he would write the date, not 5784, but 3300 and whatever from the Exodus from Egypt, which again points to the fact that if you are telling the story, you should make sure you're telling the right story. Rav Moshe Sternbach in Tshuva Van Hagot, again, thinks it's a nice thing to do to use the Jewish calendar, but not a formal obligation. And he notes that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, when he would pay his workers, so he would do it according to the secular months, because that was what was relevant. Rav Asher Weiss notes that many Rishonim don't even mention this commandment. Further, he says, what's the problem with using the secular months? Right, they're not really months in the sense as they don't have a specific, they're not tied to a particular cycle of the sun or of the moon, right? A month is tied to the moon. And they're somewhat arbitrary, 30, 31, rather when the actual date of a lunar month is 29 and a half days and change. And therefore he says it's simply, right, he says it's not a problem because it's not meaningful. But again, he thinks that it's important to make a nod towards keeping the Jewish calendar by putting it on fancy things like wedding invitations and the like, where there's no cost to doing it. But on financial documents, using the secular date, everyone understands why you're doing it. The Chayei Adam, in number 18, just reminds you that whatever mitzvah this is, it's not just the months and the years, but it's also the days of the week to be counting towards Shabbat. But here as well, you have the dispute whether that means you should also count towards Shabbat or you should exclusively count towards Shabbat. So Mikrai Kodesh, Versi Pesach Frank, argues that it means you should also count towards Shabbat. And therefore, since when we say Shir Shel Yom, we say the Psalm of Tehillim every day, we say Hayom Yom Rishon, today is the first day of Shabbat, That's sufficient because we're invoking this, the memory of Shabbat. And as I mentioned, the current law in Israel is that you include include both. So just to quickly summarize, right, this very narrow halachic issue, to me, is fascinating because it points to very broad philosophical, social identity issues. Right? We have those who say your identity should be exclusively Jewish, and therefore that should be reflected in the way you mark your weeks, your months, and your years. You have those who say, it doesn't matter. Time, marking time is just practical, and therefore who cares how you do it? And then you have those who say, listen, it's important to not forget the Jewish calendar, but that doesn't mean you can't tell different stories. You can't have different values that integrate into the story you tell, and therefore you shouldn't forget the place you are in Shabbat. You shouldn't forget how you're oriented towards the Exodus. But that doesn't mean that you can't tell two stories or three stories simultaneously of who you are and how you mark time and how you mark your national consciousness. And therefore this, you know, as we go into the new secular calendar, the new tax year, whatever you want to refer to it, exploring what it is we think we're doing when we mark time, and how we should think about time and think about the role of these little things that orient the way we think about our place in the world, I think it's very important. And you know, as is often the case, these halachic issues point to broader philosophical, societal issues. Okay, so I will open up to questions. I see Rebecca said, how does it all come to bear on the difference between tribal organization and globalization, meaning the value of adaptability and what it means to relate to global identities and cultures, right? So I think Rebecca's hitting on something very important, right? So as I mentioned, for example, from my example in the beginning, that in Efrat, which has many Americans, but also in Israel, where the Ethiopian population is quite well represented, so there is an active attempt, right, by people to incorporate Thanksgiving and then Sigid, because right, they're incorporating different identities. And I think that's a conscious choice, right? It's a recognition that to be Israeli, to be part of this country, is to recognize the peoples, the histories of each individual group, and to synthesize it. And the same thing is true in terms of the broader scale, right? If you're living in America, you're living in Canada, and it marks the calendar based on the secular one, and right, obviously the fact that we are oriented, even for practical purposes, around January, February, and the like, means that we're part of that story. Whether you choose to only be part of that story for practical purposes, you know, for taxes and paying your workers and things like that, or you choose to always mark both, which is the law in Israel, right, to highlight the fact that we are both a Jewish state, but we're also part of the world, which uses a different calendar, right, that choice highlights a different way of negotiating hybrid identities, hybrid commemorations of the passage of time, right. But I think it really does point to those issues, right? It's not just a technical halachic issue; it's a choice of the story you think you're telling as you write the little thing on the top or the bottom of your documents. Shlomo says, "How does this play into the validity of Ketubot and Gittin? Or sure, they're marked with Gentile dates." So the question of Gittin is very complicated. Gittin have infinite rules, where we are very, very specific, and there are very, very careful rules, both not just in terms of dates, but also in terms of names, right? Whether you count the Jewish names, do you count the non-Jewish names that people have? Is there a difference between how someone got those names? So it's part of a much broader discussion, which we can't get into the full thing, but you're right to ask it, right? That when we get to legal documentation, the fact that we have met so much literature trying to figure out how you refer to the dates and how you refer to names of the people who are in it highlights that same thing of dual identities. And we, you know, within it, we write, you know, like names is a good example, but we'll write the person's name is X, Hamechuna Y, right? He has a nickname, or he's also called this, right? So it gives, and is that practical or is it fundamental that he has a dual identity? But it definitely connects to that as well. But it's a much broader conversation. Okay, any other questions, comments, thoughts on the halachic issues, the philosophical, societal issues that it raises from students or parents? And otherwise, I will. We try to finish about an hour, so I will. I will let you go in 60 seconds or so if there aren't questions. Okay, it was really wonderful learning with all of you, thinking this through with all of you. And like I said, I hope to see you at future classes. If you come visit, we'd love to see you in our Beit Midrash and get to meet you in person. In the meantime, have a good night. Good to see everyone. Okay.